At this time, it is my special pleasure to introduce our speaker for tonight, my buddy Cliff. Come on up, Clifford, let's do this.
Cliff Hogan, alcoholic. What a group. I bet you if I would have walked into any bar in Chula Vista, I would not have found any one of you two in the same bar at any time. What a group. But here we are, you know? We're happy. At least most of us are. I know I am, you know? And I'm sober, you know? And I didn't know those two existed when I got here. I had no clue. I thought the only way I could be happy was if I was drinking. And I did that for a long time. That's what got me started in it. Up until, it was June 28th, 2013 is when I got sober. I woke up in the hospital. Before that, I was, qualify myself with this. I started drinking at a young age, trying to keep up with my older brother and sister and run with that crowd. And that served me well for a while, and I was having fun. The only reason I was drinking was to have fun, because it seemed like it was a fun thing to do. You know, that's what everybody else was doing. And I enjoyed it, you know. It served me well at that time. It really did. Had a lot of fun with that. I grew up I got a little older and got out on my own, away from the house, you know, and my first freedom, I had moved to Washington State. I was 17 years old. I'd moved out of the house. Had enough of mom because she was just trying to raise me by herself. I got out of the house, went up there, and wanted to be a lumberjack because, you know, I'm built for it, right? Well, that didn't last very long. And I got hooked up with some friends up there. Made some friends up there, and one of them, he was a big dude. His name was Dudley. And he was a lumberjack. I was like, that's perfect. I got to get to know this guy. Well, he and I decided to go to a party one night. And on the way home from that party, I rode my motorcycle at night on the streets. It was a dirt bike. It was absolutely not street legal. No lights, no horn, no nothing. It was the only time I ever rode without a helmet in my entire life. And I was drunk as hell. And I was riding wheelie through the intersection. Went right through the stop sign, blind corner, logging truck never saw me, nailed me, put me in the hospital for a couple of months, thought I was going to die, because I remember I looked over and there was this big red H with a big black eye in the middle of it, and that was the last thing I saw before I hit the curb, and that's an international symbol on the front end of a truck. I really thought I was going to die. I lay on my back, and there was blood all over my face, and I knew I was hurt bad. I just laid there and said, help me, I'm hurt, at the top of my lungs. Lady comes out, and she looks at me. She walks back in the house. She comes back out with a sheet and put it over the top of me. And I said, I'm not dead. And she says, I know, honey, I know. You're going to go into shock. It's going to be all right. She'd already gotten on the phone to the hospital. They sent the ambulance, got to the hospital. I had a bunch of broken bones. Face was all tore up because I hit the curb here. And just tore everything off, just ripped it all up. Can't imagine that happened, you know. I was fortunate I didn't get any really big scars from that. I did knock out all these teeth, so from that time on until I was 42, I didn't have front teeth. Didn't matter to me because I could still drink, right? Because that didn't stop me from drinking, because that wasn't the problem. The problem was I got on that motorcycle. Fast forward a little while, I got back down to San Diego, got back on my feet, started running with my brother again, started doing some stuff, ended up in jail for a year. The alcohol wasn't the problem. The problem was I was hanging with my brother. Well, not that we were doing bad stuff, it's because I was hanging with my brother. So I got involved with this gal after I got out of jail. I got involved with this gal. And we really hit it off, man. We really hit it off. And I got real serious about being a good person. And I slowed down on my drinking. And I became a husband. And not long after that, I became a father. And I was fairly good at it. My son's back there somewhere. Yeah. Go ahead, stand up back there. Show him. That's my baby boy. He looks like a lumberjack. Yeah. He's my third child. My fourth child is his twin sister. Luckily, she doesn't look anything at all like him. And I've got two older brothers. He's got two older brothers. When my first son was born, I quit drinking for a long time. I really got busy about being a good husband, a good dad. You know, it really sobered me up. A whole 2 years I got sober. Well, you know, then of course I got busy drinking again, had another son. It wasn't such a big deal, you know, because the second one's not nearly as powerful as the first one because you're used to it by then. You know what to expect. Not that they're not any more special, but you just know what to expect. I went on in that path for quite a while. Weekend benders every now and then, not really all that bad. I stayed pretty steady. But then, of course, I don't know at what point I crossed that line, but I know that I was drunk when I crossed it. You know, I know I was. Because at some point, it was no longer the occasional weekend drink. It was the weekend drink every weekend for the entire weekend. And it wasn't just one or two. It was the entire weekend. And we had moved to Texas. We lived in a dry county. And I got really, really serious about my drinking out there, even though I lived in a dry county. So I'd have to go and get a good supply amount and bring it back home. So I'd have something there with me all the time. And I was buying gallons of whiskey at a time, 3 or 4 bottles of it at a time. I got real busy with my alcoholism at that point, and I realized I was an alcoholic. And I got proud of it. Not that I was doing anything about it that was good, except drinking more. You know, I let my children down quite a bit, quite often, you know. And there was a lot of really bad times, but there were some good times before that, you know. My ex-wife had completely given up on me. You know, that she was done with me. We moved back to San Diego, and I found somebody else that would let me drink the way I wanted to drink, and I left. I left that family. Not really the biggest regret, but one of them, you know. I didn't give them the opportunity of seeing me back as being a good father and a good dad. I didn't give them that opportunity. I just left. You know, and that hurt. It bothers me. But I'm not going to forget the past. But I don't have to live like that anymore. You know, I got to a point in my drinking where nobody wanted to talk to me. My mother kicked me out of her place. My son came and picked me up in Santa Rosa. Drove me all the way back down here. And I got a place and I got a job and I did okay for a little while, but my drinking got the best of me again and I ended up living in his mom's garage. She didn't even know it at first. And when she found out, she was sympathetic, said, you know, you can stay on the couch if you don't drink. Well, it didn't take me long to screw that up too. And I knew where I was going with this because out there in Texas, I had seen a few of my friends out there die from this disease. And it's a slow, painful death, you know, cirrhosis of the liver, you know, kidney disease, all that kind of stuff. And I was afraid of that long, slow, painful death. I was really terrified of that. There were quite a few times when my children were trying to get me sober. You know, they were trying their best. They were not giving up on me completely yet. They really were. My son brought home one of those Costco pickle jars, those big, huge pickle jars, and he put it on the coffee table, and he said, if you don't stop drinking, I'm going to put you in that. He's big enough to do that, you know? He was always there for me, you know? He didn't like what I was doing, but he was always there for me. There was a few other times that him and I had some good times, too, you know? But there was one time that he wasn't having a good time with me, but I thought I was having a good time, and I was pretty drunk. And I wake up just in time to realize he's choking me out because I'm being a drunk asshole. Sorry for my French, but there's no better way to put it. He put me out, let me lay on the floor. And when I came to, I realized what had happened, and I just left. I was so embarrassed, you know. There have been many, many times of that kind of thing where he was there for me but wasn't going to put up with my crap, you know. I tried going to AA. I did. I didn't try it. I didn't do it. I just tried it. And that wasn't for the right reason. It wasn't so that I could stop drinking. It was to get them off my back, you know. And, of course, like anybody else in here that tried that knows, it doesn't work. It just doesn't work. I wasn't getting serious about the program. I wasn't ready for that defense against that first drink. I wasn't ready for that. I was going home from a AA meeting, and I pulled into a liquor store to buy myself a package of tobacco, and I came out with a bottle of booze as well as that tobacco. I wasn't planning on it. It just happened. You know, I can't exactly say why I ended up with it, but I did. And what I did with that booze, I didn't take it back in there and get my money back. I didn't pour it out. I drank it because that's what I was ready to do. And that was the beginning of my last big run. That was it. I got kicked out to the garage again. You know, things were going bad real quickly. You know, and then the only thing that was going to save me from that long, slow, painful death was a quick death. And alcohol was going to do it. And I had a machinist job where I could work for this guy for drink money. And he knew that that's what the deal was. There's no doubt in my mind. Him and I talked later on about that. He said, well, in the mornings, he would give me a part and tell me to make it to these specifications. And he'd give me a list of specifications. And if I could make that part to those specifications, I could run that machine for the day. Or at least until lunch when he'd pay me something, I'd go and get drunk. If I wasn't able to make that part, he'd let me sweep the floors. You know, he was a really good man. He didn't want to see me on the streets without any money. And he got some good parts out of me. You know, he was making some decent parts. I was doing some fun work. I liked that kind of thing. The kind of thing I like to do, fix things, repair things. Make new things. It's a lot of fun. It got real ugly, though. So I knew I was going to die from it. So he paid me, and I went and bought as much booze as I could get and put it in me as fast as I could so I could die. I had made that decision. I was going to die that day. And I took the steps to make it happen. My son found me, dying. Called the paramedics. I woke up in the hospital and realized two things. Because I didn't remember him finding me. I didn't remember anything about that at all. But I realized two things at that point. I screwed up plan A. And God had a reason for keeping me alive. And plan B was you guys. I didn't want to tell them at the hospital that I had tried to commit suicide because they would have kept me and I didn't want to stay. I'd stayed too many times at too many other places. And I didn't stay for the entire time. I always checked myself out. One place I wasn't able to check out of really quickly, though, was CMH. You know, they didn't let me out too quick. It took me a while to get out of that place. I tell you, that was a rough one. And that's when I realized that my initials are CMH. I'm like, wait a minute. Yeah, I woke up in there after a good run through North Park, butt naked looking for God. Great spot, yeah. Good times. Yeah. I woke up there, and I was checking myself out, and they asked me if I had a ride. And I was at Grossmont Hospital, and I lived in Spring Valley. Well, I was staying on her couch in Spring Valley. And I said, yeah, I've got a ride. I got my phone. I can call somebody. Well, at that point, everybody was done with me. They had seen me. They had gone down that road with me far too many times. They were absolutely 100% done, including my son. He wanted to see me get better, but he was done trying to help. He had done everything he possibly could. I don't blame him a minute. I'm thankful he didn't answer that phone. I'm thankful nobody answered that phone. Because then I would have had a ride. And I would have had a lot more time, and I wouldn't have had the time that I needed. When I was a young man growing up, I knew about God, a God. And I was always looking for a God I could do business with, always. I would go to churches to check them out and see if I could find a God I could do business with. I went to so many different types of churches, it was great. Some of them I just didn't like, some of them I really liked, but I never went back because they didn't have a God of my understanding, somebody I could do business with. When I woke up in the hospital and I called those people and they didn't want to talk, they didn't want to come pick me up, I walked from Grossmont Hospital to Hemishaw Road in Spring Valley. I knew how to get there, but I never had done the back streets before, and I wasn't going to get on the city streets like Sweetwater Road because I had driven down that road too many times drunk. I know I was going to get run over that late at night. So I went the back streets, and I talked to the only one that was talking to me, that was listening, that I felt I had their ear, God. That whole way. That's a good long walk, especially 10 o'clock at night. I mean, nobody else around, pretty quiet. It's a nice long walk. I don't recommend it. It worked for me, but I don't know if it would work for you. I woke up the next morning. Well, I got to the apartment. They didn't even answer the door. I just had to sleep on the patio, which was fine with me. I made it to my destination, and I knew I didn't drink that night. And that's all I was looking for. I didn't want to drink anymore. I honestly, seriously did not want to drink anymore because it was going to kill me. I had proved that to myself. I woke up that next morning, and one of my neighbors had been telling me I needed to go to AA. So I asked her where the nearest one was, and she said, Lemon Grove, Alano Club. I found that place, and I stayed there all day. I got there early in the morning, and I stayed there all day. And I was afraid to leave that property. I was absolutely, deathly afraid to leave that property because I knew what I was going to do if I did. I'd done it before, and I knew it was going to kill me. I stayed there the whole day. I did that for 3 days in a row, and finally somebody there told me about this place. With my son's help, we found this place. It's not the easiest place to find. I mean, you can pass it up so easy, and we did. And finally, one of those times we were passing it up, he slowed the car down. He goes, there it is, Dad, tuck and roll. Open the door, and out I went. Actually, he pulled in here, and we came in, and we made sure that I was going to stay because he'd seen me walk away from too many places before, and he'd seen how beat up I was this time. And he knew this was my last stop. He talked to Floyd and told Floyd, keep an eye on him. He's a runner. Well, yeah, my first day here was actually the 4th of July. Didn't even realize this is how torn up my head was. I didn't even realize it was 4th of July at that time. Had no clue what date it was. I knew it was daytime. I didn't know what day of the week it was. I didn't know what day of the month it was. I knew what year it was. So they're having this little barbecue thing out back for the 4th of July, and I have no idea it's the 4th of July stuff, right? And I'm getting in here, I'm like, wow, they treat these guys good up in here. This is a nice spot, you know? Damn, look at that. This is good. Well, that night, during the day, they had shown me where my bed was. I was like, okay, well, that's not bad. It's pretty clean. It's pretty nice. It's pretty good spot, you know. And I went to sleep that night, and I actually slept fairly well. I'm still having some issues with sleep because my mind was racing everywhere. I hadn't conquered that demon yet. I got up the next morning expecting, you know, bacon and eggs or, you know, pancakes or something, you know? I get a bowl of cereal. Oh, it was 4th of July. I get it. Okay, yeah. Wow, okay. Yeah. That first day here was pretty cool. You know, and it was very memorable for me. Took me about 6 months to realize that was actually my dad's sobriety date, the 4th of July. I was like, that's pretty cool. I didn't have a clue about that until after I was, you know, a little sober, got a little clearer, went, huh, how weird is that? My dad, he had a few years of sobriety before he passed. He passed at 54 years old, and he had, I think it was 12 years of sobriety, I'm not sure. But he'd been not drinking for a long time. But up until 12 years prior to that, he had been doing the marijuana maintenance program. So he wasn't really sober. But that was his deal, not mine. You know. And I always faulted him for that until I got sober and I realized he was doing what he needed to do to get sober. It wasn't his time to get completely sober, I guess. But he did put that down when I told him he had to leave my home because he wouldn't stop smoking pot in front of my kids. But yet I was able to drink right in front of him. That didn't bother me at all. But, you know, he didn't pass any judgment on me that time. But he did quit smoking pot. Within like three or four months, he did stop. You know, and that was pretty cool. My first Monday night men's meeting here, there was a guy that came here, his name was, well, we called him Cookie Tom, and he would bring cookies to the men's meeting. He's a pretty cool cat. He got up here that Monday night, and he said he had tried to commit suicide with alcohol as well. And all that, up until that moment, I thought I was really unique. You know, I had never heard anybody say about that before. Hey, that guy's kind of cool. And look at that. He looks like he's pretty happy. Hell, he brings cookies. Guy's got to be halfway decent, you know? So I went and talked to him because he had what I wanted. He was happy and he was sober. And I got busy with what that man told me to do. First thing he had me do was read that book as a textbook. You know, go through that thing. If you don't understand a word or if you think you understand a word, look it up. And then him and I read that book together. And he pointed out some words that I thought I knew the meaning to that he had me look up in a dictionary. A little bit different. Enough to make a difference. My first fourth step I took to him, he said, yeah, I think you might be holding something back. And of course I was. And he says, if you really want to get sober, go back and do this right, completely and honestly. And I did. On the fifth step, him and I went through that and we got that all figured out. And then he told me something really weird I was not expecting. After we got done with my fifth step, he said, now go home, sit for an hour, and think about it. I had never had to meditate before, but yet my sponsor was telling me to do that. It was odd. It was really odd for me. But it wasn't long after that my mind was able to shut down at night and I was able to sleep. I had a clear conscience. I got rid of all that crap that I had done to my family. Not just my children, but my ex-wife, my mom, my sister, my brother, everybody. I got rid of all that. And I was able to sleep through the night without big nightmares and stuff. You know, that was a huge step for me. Because, I mean, I really had a hard time with that at first. Another thing I had a real hard time at first was having to deal with feelings, you know, because for a long time I didn't deal with them. I drank at them. You know, I drowned those son of bitches. I didn't want to have to deal with it at all. I felt bad, I drank. I felt good, I drank. I was breathing, I drank. You know, it was on. I was having a really bad day one day, and him and I sat down and talked, and at the end of that talk, he says, you know, this too shall pass. And I thought about that for a minute, and he's like, I said, yeah, it will. It's going to get better. A couple months down the road, I was feeling really good, having a good day. I called him up, and I told him, hey, yeah, I'm having a great day. I can't remember exactly what it was, but something had happened that was really cool. And he says, yeah, cool. This too shall pass. I'm like, you bastard, man. Yeah, he's right. Deal with life, you know. He taught me a lot about myself. You know, I went and did my fifth step, and I got busy on the character defects too. You know, I made this list of character defects that I thought I had, and I took that to him, and he looked at that, and he says, "You're not talking to enough people. Go ask some people, because apparently you're not seeing it." And so I did. And yeah, you guys helped out a lot. And I tried to let go of those. You know, there's still a few that I'm still working on, but most of them are going away. You know, and it's not by me, with the help of God. You know, God plays a big, huge part in my life, thanks to you guys. Because all those churches that I went to looking for God, I didn't find a God I could do business with until I got here. And that's when I found a God I could do business with. You know, this might not be a church, but you guys showed me what God is supposed to be like. And I found a church that I can go to now that has that same value. You know, it's awesome. I was up here last year, almost a year ago, one day shy of a year, and I didn't know it at the time, but God was also working in my life in another way. You know, I had no clue. I just met her. It was pretty cool. I'd gone through a really ugly breakup of a relationship, and it got really ugly really quickly. And it was mostly because I had stepped away from the program. And when I'd stepped away from the program, I got a phone call. And he said, son, you need to get your ass to a meeting. And I did. And I got busy again. It was too late for that relationship. That relationship was toast. I had burned that one. But you know what? I've never looked back. I waited about a year. I waited before I got, you know, I wasn't even looking. But I found somebody that's in this program. I had no idea she was even in the program when we first started talking. You know, this person has really enhanced my life, really has. You know, and that's all because of God and this program. You know, it's how can I say it? I just retired too. You know, this program is amazing what it can do for you, if you do it. There's definitely two parts to this program, and you guys probably already heard this. There's the book work, along with the steps and the self work, and there's also the fellowship. Both are equally important. The book work is to help you get your head on straight. The fellowship is to have fun. Because if you're not having fun, you're not going to do it. I mean, why'd we start drinking? Because we were having fun, right? Well, if you're not having fun, you're doing it wrong. Because you're supposed to be up here and be happy, right? I know I am most of the time. Well, I run into some issues, but I know what I need to do when I do run into those issues. I've got friends I can call that have been through these issues. And when they're having issues, they call me. And, you know, to this day, I have not found it necessary to drink over anything. You know, it's come close. Like when I stepped away from the program, I probably could have, you know, within a few weeks, probably could have been drunk. You know, it was getting a little sketchy there, but I made it because of this fellowship and this program. You know, I knew that I finally had that defense against the first drink, and it felt so good. It really does. I was able to retire, and now I'm looking at different goals. You know, I have. I look at the weather report a lot, and I'm looking at the sailing, wind speeds, water temperature, currents, and I can't wait to get out there. It's what I do for fun. I sail. You're going to get wet, sweetheart. We're going to go have some fun, you know. I have other things that I do that I can do sober. It's a blast, you know. If it hadn't been for this program, I would never have had any of this. And I skipped over something I need to talk about, that kitchen over there. You know, I got to work there. That first year, I got to work there because I was so tore up when I got here. I felt like I was lying to people by just filling out a job application because I didn't think I could really do the job. And I talked to the guys in the office about that, and they said they have an opening in the kitchen if I wanted it. I said, hell yeah. So I got to work in that kitchen for a little over a year, maybe a year, right around there. And that, what that did for me is that expanded the fellowship portion of this program. You know, I got to meet a lot of you guys. I got to feed you guys a lot. Sorry about some of the lunches. I wasn't having a good day. Not all of them were on purpose. you know, that without that foundation that I've got here in this house, I'm pretty certain I wouldn't still be sober. You know, the people that I got to know here have been amazing. Great inspirations. You know, the people I got to serve food to, you know, I still see a lot of them. You know, it's awesome. This is the best. This is probably the best thing that's ever happened to me. Sorry, Christopher. This is probably the best thing that's ever happened to me. But, you know, I don't know what else to say. There is a couple more things I want to touch on. Lately, I've been noticing in the rooms that I guess I'm becoming an old timer. I've been noticing some things in the rooms that I really don't like happening. And I've talked to the people about it, you know, and usually it's met with really good open-mindedness. But there's a few that have a closed mind and they don't want to listen. And that's hard for me to accept. If you just keep an open mind, things go so much better. They really do. And I'm not asking, you know, for people to do anything that's not right straight out of AA. Not, you know, and it hurts to watch them do these things, you know, and I'm talking to the guys in the room right now, okay? Too many times I've seen guys trying to hit on newcoming women, and it bothers me so very, very much. It really does. There's no need for it. That's not why we're here. We're here to get sober. We're here to help each other, right? And so if you see that in the rooms, it's okay to speak up about it. You don't have to be the cool guy that thinks it's okay. It's okay to say something about it. Because I've seen that happen too often, and it hurts the person. Always. And I never want to see a new person go out that way. Never. And that's about really all I have. That's all the preaching I'm going to do tonight. Thanks for letting me be of service. I appreciate you all.
Rebuttal time. I'm Judy, and I'm an alcoholic. And I just want to point out, though Cliff gave it away, that yesterday he retired, and so today is his first day of freedom. So could we all sing happy retirement to him with the birthday song? Happy retirement to you. Happy retirement to you. Happy retirement, dear Clifford. Happy retirement to you. Yeah! Thank you.
Clifford, happy retirement. And thank you for coming to share your experience, strength, and hope with us. One more time for my buddy Cliff. Thank you to the residents of the house and the women of the Ladies Auxiliary for a great dinner tonight. Let's circle up.